plans for my crazy day. My packed commute. All those unread emails in my inbox. But I'm getting stronger, faster, and pushing myself further every day. I don't care if I'm not like everyone else. This punching bag is the best way to end my day.
Fearless is knowing yoga isn't your style. That's the power of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Learn more about our healthy benefits at fepblue.org/getmore.
You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I am Grant Goldberg, joined as always by Spike Friedman. And we played the New York Giants yesterday and got out with a win. And it was what we expected. It was dominant, but maybe not as dominant as we would have liked. Spike, did you have anything right off the top of your head that you want to talk about the Seahawks and Giants game?
I believe the last words said on the Locked On Seahawks podcast last week were me going, it's going to be like 23-7 or something stupid like that. And then it was 24-7. So
it was heads something up. Stupid like that.
Look, today's not a day where we're sponsored by a gambling website, but in a hypothetical future day when we're sponsored by a gambling website, remember how much I nailed that pick.
Right. And remember how we picked the first game, too. So we have a history. We have a track record with this kind of,
yeah,
stuff.
This is just great content. Us nailing picks week in and week out. This game made me exhausted. It was just, like, exhausting for a couple quarters. And then it was, like, mostly relief to the point where Paul Richardson caught a Fail Mary at the end of a flea flicker that basically upped our win expectancy by like a solid 15%. Like, it was a crucial play. And I like barely felt anything. I was like, oh, thank God. But it was like a flea flicker Fail Mary to Paul Richardson to essentially ice the game. Like, that's an incredible play that it was like, because of the emotional state that this Seahawks team is willing to put us in, it's just like we miss how amazing that is. Like, right. That's crazy. Like, that's a crazy play to happen in the fourth quarter of, at the time, I believe, still a one-score game.
Yeah, I think, like, as at such a high-leverage play, the main reaction was, ugh, finally.
Yeah, exactly. And not like, oh my God, flea flicker, Fail Mary over Landon Collins, and then they got the call right. Like, Richardson earned that touchdown. It wasn't unlike in Green Bay where it was like a little dicey. Oh, yeah. Like, I still think, you know, whatever. Yeah, Ty goes to the runner. But in this case, Richardson fought Landon Collins, who was an all-pro last year because of Earl Thomas' tragedies, and was able to, you know, you don't think about Paul Richardson as like a super strong receiver.
Right.
You think of him as like a fast and like twitchy receiver. And so for him to out-muscle Landon Collins and basically win us the game on a flea flicker. Like, holy crap. Holy crap.
I think it's because, like, Russell Wilson threw that ball and not Tanner McAvoy. So we're all just a lot more calm when that play unfolded. We're like, okay, well, at least we have our quarterback throwing the ball.
We're going to be running through a bunch of our post-game specials, but we don't have any room to talk about the fact that, like, Tanner McAvoy might not be an NFL player at this point.
Right. I don't think, I mean, it's hard to see him carve out an actual role on this team.
And he keeps committing special teams penalties and turning the ball over.
Which is, like, really bad, especially on this team where, like, you need to earn some time on, like, playing time on special teams. Like,
yeah,
it's not a good look for Tanner McAvoy.
Not a good look for Tanner McAvoy on Sunday. That's the big takeaway from this 17-point win over the Giants, is not a great game for Tanner McAvoy. I'll just say, like, we beat the Giants by 17. We outgained them more than 2-1, almost 3-1. And it's still, because of the penalties and the lack of execution on offense, was a really hard-fought win despite the final score, which makes it look way more comfortable than it felt.
Yeah, the Giants had 6 first downs because of penalties. So I mean,
I think they only had five because of plays.
Oh, like, my gosh, that would be something incredible. But there were 2 for 12 on third down. Like,
no, they had eight. They had eight passing first downs because they got a few late in the game.
Right,
and they had and then, six first downs for penalties and zero from rushing the ball.
Yeah, their last drive where they were kind of dink and dunking it down the field, it really accounted for most of their yards and most of their first downs.
Yeah, and I will say that Earl Thomas took pity on Eli Manning and dropped something like 7 potential interceptions.
Yeah, and then Shaquille Griffin also dropped an interception too. So I think they were just at the point where they were as exhausted as us mentally.
Yeah.
Not even physically, because I don't think that was a very taxing game on the defense.
But I do think, I think Griffin, they've been talking about how much he's being mentored by Richard Sherman and how he might be the best number two corner we had. Pete said that post game. But he's also probably being mentored by Earl Thomas to learn how to drop easy interceptions.
Right.
Like, because, he's like, just learning from the experts.
He's not quite at the point where Earl is, where he knows he could go to the house if he catches this ball, and his eyes are already on the end zone. So catching the ball is like a big step in the middle of that. And so Shaquille Griffin's at that point. He's not looking towards the end zone yet, but yeah. he definitely has to drop a couple more balls to get to that point.
Yep. And all right, let's
get off the topic of dropping balls, and we'll get into a little bit of a game note. I said on Thursday the Seahawks needed to use Jimmy Graham. It was a good matchup for him, and you definitely saw as this game unfolded. This could have been a monster game for Jimmy Graham.
Yeah,
he had two monumental drops. He didn't come through in the first half, and luckily in the second half he made those kind of catches where it's a high degree of difficulty for Jimmy Graham, and he makes it look easy. And with those drops, I mean, he could have had over 100 yards. He would have had, like, 2, maybe 3 touchdowns, because that route up the sideline, you know, he had open field ahead of him. And Jimmy Graham, while he hasn't been able to break tackles like he did in New Orleans, he's still Jimmy Graham. He's still, like, 6'6" and, like, 482 pounds. And he can break a tackle if he needs to. He definitely had the opportunity. He definitely had those two really bad drops. And so immediately in the first half, I was like, all right, well, we answered the question about if his cap hit is worth it. And I'm like, it's definitely not, just because of this game. And then so he kind of exercised a little bit of demons, catching that touchdown and really making up for a bad first half, where if not for those two drops, it could have been even worse of a blowout.
Yeah, and it should have been. With Graham, he isn't worth what we spent on him, and he's being increasingly tough to grade because his failures are crucial and big, because he is talented enough where Wilson is going to go to him at crucial and big moments. And so you end up with a player who is not doing enough, but is still enough of a freakish athlete and has the pedigree and makes some plays that you can't write him off. And so I feel like we gotta, like, stop thinking about him as Jimmy Graham. We gotta, like, take his cost away. You know, like, we're not gonna get away from the cap hit, and we're not gonna get away from the drops he's already had, but we sort of just need to wipe the slate clean with Graham. And, you know, there's that thing of, like, yeah, we got to force it to him in the red zone, but it's like, maybe we don't. Maybe, like, let's just get back to how, like, let's just calm down on the whole Jimmy Graham thing in all ways, and just be like, yeah, he's a fancier Luke Wilson. Like, and then you're like, oh, well, look at how good he is. He's a fancier Luke Wilson. And why are we paying that guy so much money? I don't know. We paid Zach Miller a lot of money, too, and he was, I mean, he was really good at blocking, but,
right. You
know, there were other things going on there.
No, yeah, he caught a seam route up the field, and he had no one within at least 40 yards of him and got tackled at, like, the 10-yard line.
Yeah, exactly. So, the Jimmy Graham question, it's loud, and, again, it's just coming up at big moments this year, but I feel like it's too loud in some ways when you're talking about a guy who's, like, producing pretty well for a tight end in a league where pretty much only Rob Gronkowski is playing at that level. Like, And we'll talk about what the Giants have at tight end later, but there isn't, like, that tight end, like, explosion that happened a couple years ago. Like, how many great tight ends are there right now? I mean, there's Gronk. Cameron Brate is playing really well in Tampa, obviously in Kansas City. Kelce is playing out of his mind. But if you look at the rest of, like, the big-name tight ends, none of them are really producing at that high level this year. Like, Delanie Walker isn't, Martellus Bennett isn't, Eric Ebron isn't. Like, there's a lot of Eric Ebron's a weird one to throw in there, I admit. Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, let's cut Jimmy some slack and move on.
Right, I feel like if he didn't have, well, I mean, the circumstances in which we got Jimmy Graham was because he was as good as he was and we traded for him. But if he didn't have that history in New Orleans and say he was drafted by Seattle and he had the same numbers, I think we'd be praising him a lot more. And I think it's just because of his cap hit that we're putting him under such scrutiny, and because of, you know, how good he was in New Orleans and how good he could be for Seattle. It's so frustrating. And yeah. If he was a homegrown Seattle player, I feel like it'd be on a different level with that. I think that we'd be a lot happier with his numbers.
Yep. Yeah.
So someone that I think we should be very happy with their numbers and is one of my unsung heroes of the game is Riso Diambo. We don't give him much love on this podcast, and he comes up a lot. So you can only imagine, if you listen to this podcast, you know how much we talk about Odhiambo and how much slack we don't give him. But
I'll just say we do admit that, like, he shouldn't be there.
He shouldn't be there, yes.
But
he's a guard.
Yeah, but on Sunday, he played like he could be there.
Right, yeah. The defensive line, they were missing Olivier Vernon, and they didn't really have much of an outside pass rush. But Riso Diambo didn't allow a sack.
Yeah.
And the offensive line as a whole allowed one. And that was in the first quarter.
Riso Diambo only allowed one pressure.
One pressure. So... Yeah. Riso Diambo, I don't know if you're listening. You may be using this as a source of inspiration, like bulletin board material. And you went out, you played well, and you really, like, maybe staked your claim at the left tackle position for the foreseeable future. I mean, we'll have to build off this performance. It's definitely an outlier this season. So it's great progress, and hopefully we build off that.
Yeah, I'll say this. The whole offensive line played really well, except for Jermaine Ifedi, who had a bunch of penalties and was up against Jason Bierre-Paul and did give up some pressures. But Britt was pretty epic. And then I'm pulling this from Samuel Gold on Twitter, who's a Redskins guy, but he does great video breakdowns on field goals sometimes. And Ethan Posick and Mark Lewinsky only combined for one QB pressure, and Ode Ibushi didn't give up any QB pressures. So even though our run game just did okay, and let's face it, Damon Snacks Harrison is really, really good for the Giants, the whole line is an unsung hero this week.
Yeah, I was going to mention...
Sing him out, baby.
Yeah, Mark Lewinsky, as one of them, he had a really nice pull block on J.D. McKissick's run to the outside that sprung it for like 14 or 15 yards. And that was one of the highlights of the game for me, just to see, like, some steady play in that, and not to just pull off the theatrics that Tom Cable wants him to do.
Well, and there's a thing of, like, sometimes some players struggle transitioning from guard to tackle. Other players transition struggling from the left side to the right side because you have to invert your footwork. Right. And it might be a thing where Glowinski's just better on the left. I don't know. That's a theory based on a tiny sample size, but, like, I'm willing to not abandon all hope re-Mark Lewinsky if I've got a theory that can back it up. So why not?
Yeah, no, he was, and, like, let's not sugarcoat it, he was downright terrible in the first two games.
Yeah.
And it was the right move benching him and going to Ibushi. But he did look good yesterday. Speaking of Ibushi, he had a good game, except one play he just got blown up by Snacks Harrison, which, I mean, it's going to happen regardless.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so you kind of just, like, chalk it up, like, oh, that's just the game.
Ibushi's been drawing some brutal matchups.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Last week he had Aaron Donald in his face all week. This week he had Damon Snacks Harrison. And you've still, like, I mean, we ran the ball okay.
Yeah.
We didn't run it great. Both Rawls and Lacey had moments where they popped, had moments where they looked terrible. J.D. McKissick looks great running to the outside, looks terrible running inside. We don't have a guy right now who I feel great about running between the tackles, which is a bummer because Chris Carson was that guy, and we're going to need to keep figuring that out, keep that competition going, as Pete would say. But, you know, like, in the past, it could be worse. We've certainly seen worse.
Yes, exactly. Our standards aren't very high.
No, they're very low.
Yeah. So we'll move on to a place where our standards usually are high. They were down last year, but special teams stood out. DJ Alexander blocked a punt. So, I mean, right off that, the trade was worth it. All right, good win, John Snyder.
Yeah. I mean, he's been awesome this year. DJ Alexander has been awesome.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll mention this because it's our brand. Nico Thorpe, still a baller.
Yeah. Oh, man.
He's so good.
Well, and I'll also say Justin Coleman did pretty well in the slot again. There's some debate as to whether he's, you know, just a fancy Marcus Burley or if he is a long-term answer at slot corner. And we don't know yet. We haven't played a great slot receiver with him. We'll see it against – well, we might not see it again with Larry Fitzgerald because they might have Drew Stanton at quarterback. But we'll see it at some point this year. But – Coleman is contributing enough at special teams that even if he doesn't own that slot corner spot going forward, he has shown himself to be the sort of fourth cornerback who can also contribute on special teams and be sort of a buffer between Nico Thorpe playing crucial snaps at cornerback and then just letting Nico Thorpe eat on coverage. Right. 'Cause he was eating on coverage.
Yeah, for as much as I want Nico Thorpe to evolve into like a lockdown corner, I'm not going to put too much hope into that. It's more of a pipe dream. But that's kind of like the best case scenario in my mind for the Seahawks team, having someone as good as Nico Thorpe is on special teams be as good as a cornerback. So, you know, hopefully, like, maybe down the road, like, we'll make advances in, like, tech and science, and we'll give him cybernetic improvements, and he'll be a lockdown corner. So we'll see in, like, 2025. And if my theory pays off.
Yeah, and, you know, it can't hurt that he's getting coached up by Pete every week. You know, like, I'm sure he's developing that phase of his game. So we'll see. We'll see. It's all exciting. I'm going to get into another defensive back that we've talked about on the podcast. And that defensive back is Cam Chancellor. And with Cam, I floated the theory both here and in the pages of The Stranger. After watching a couple early games and watching Cam blow some coverages against the Rams and make some mistakes, and that theory was, is Cam Chancellor washed? And the first play that the Giants ran yesterday was a running play, and Cam Chancellor went and crashed down onto Orleans Darkwa and then got pushed like 6 yards, and I was like, oh boy, Cam is washed. And then the rest of the game, he balled out so hard. So let's just get it out of the way. Cam's not washed. Cam's fine. And it reminded me, because the Seahawks have a couple guys on their defense who are truly Hall of Fame caliber players, Earl, Richard, and Bobby, like, Cam isn't that good, and he never has been that good. And so expecting him to be a mistake-free strong safety is expecting Cam Chancellor to be something other than what Cam Chancellor is. Me wanting him to never mess up is just me putting my desires out there. It isn't me fairly judging that which Cam Chancellor is. Cam Chancellor is a playmaker, and he is still making plays. And so I am increasingly understanding the ways in which I have overrated Cam Chancellor's past and underrated his present. I'm trying to bring those into harmony and balance by watching Cam Chancellor and go, yeah, he's still really, really good. Is Earl Thomas good? No, but no one is, because Earl Thomas is the greatest human being to ever live. So it doesn't matter. So that's my theory on Cam Chancellor. Cam Chancellor not washed. Cam Chancellor washed watch. Is it over? Maybe. You know, I'll still be looking for it. But I'm saying it's not. We're out of the wet. We're into the dry. Cam's fine.
Right, I think the ego took a little bit of a bruise watching him on Sunday, just because your prediction was a little off. Because I know you're not used to that. I know you're used to getting what you want and being right.
To be clear, I do not want Cam Chancellor to be washed. We just re-signed him. I love him. He's a great guy. You know, he's on my basketball team. Love him. But it is tough for me to eat all this crow and be like, nah, Cam's good. But Cam's good, so that's good.
Yeah, I mean, like, what you said, like, I back it up, and I just want to expand just for, you know, a quick
minute. Oh, yeah, go.
It's just because, I'll try to get wild, but it's just because we have to grade these players on a separate scale, given how good his surrounding players are. I mean, he's all world, and you have Richard Sherman, who's been the best corner in all of football for I don't know how long. You know, we have to start grading them as separate players instead of a whole unit all of the time. Because, you know, you grade the defensive backs as a unit, but, you know, we have to start breaking down, like, play by play, how they each individually affect it. And so, yeah, Cam isn't perfect, but, you know, for what is asked of him, he's excellent. And he fills the role that he needs to fill, and we have very few complaints about him. And so, yeah, I think he's Hall of Fame caliber. I think he'll get in.
He's not Cam?
Oh, yeah.
What? No. Yeah. No way.
Cam Chancellor will make the Hall of Fame.
I will bet everything I mean, safeties rarely make it. Cam hasn't been, like Earl is still not 100%.
Earl's making it.
I mean,
maybe I'm looking at it through like rose-colored glasses. Yeah, it's my favorite team.
You are. Like, and that's okay.
They have the ring. They have the stats. They have like the moments. Like they.
I just look at how many strong safeties are in the Hall of Fame, and like there are like three, and Cam isn't that. Like it's fine. Like Cam has been one of the best at his position for most of his career, but like it's not a position where that is enough. What Earl has done will put him in the Hall. I think same for Richard, Russ. You know, even Bobby. Bobby's going to need to stay at this level for a little bit to get his resume up there. Doug's not going to get there. Bennett's not, you know, like, it's just like very few teams have more than three or four guys get in. And Cam just isn't, it's okay. I don't mean to be a buzzkill right now, but it's not going to happen for him.
All right. Well, clearly we see two different things on this. And, I think that, you know, maybe you can improve on your Cam Chancellor Hall of Fame take.
Wow.
And I think that there's, you know, the Seahawks won 24-7, but there's definitely some things that they could improve on. And I'll go back to one thing. It's the freaking drops, man.
Yeah.
What the heck? Jimmy Graham, come on. You could have had your best game as a Seahawk. Maybe three TDs, maybe 100 yards, but no, you didn't. You dropped the ball, and it's unacceptable. You can't make these drops, man. It's not what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to catch the ball. You're supposed to run with it and eventually score. And that didn't happen a lot of the time. So, just stop doing it. You know, the Seahawks, you know, if their receiving core, and I'll include tight end in it for a little while, over the past few years, if there's one thing, it's been how sure-handed they've been. And maybe we've been spoiled. And maybe we've grown to expect, you know, maybe like a few drops throughout the season. But that hasn't been the case, and we need to adjust to it. But at the same time, we can't allow that to be a normalcy, and we can't get used to that. We can't have those drops impacting the game as they've impacted it this season.
Yeah, I mean, the drops were bad, and then, you know, it was so close on a couple of those deep shots.
Exactly.
But those deep shots are always going to be low percentage, and we hit some too. And I'm like, oh man, it could have been so good, and instead it was so stressful.
And I'll say I have this noted down. Russell Wilson, for as good as he was excellent. You got to hit those deep balls like you used to. You had them as wide open.
He hit the one to Baldwin, like. That 1-2 Lockett was like so close, and he had one to Baldwin that was like one
Baldwin
step.
Had nobody, you know.
Yeah, that was the one. That was the one he's gotta hit because he had the ability to put more air under it. The one to Lockett, you want, like we all wanted it, but like Lockett's faster than Baldwin, so he's going full speed, and It makes sense for Russ to leave a little less air under that one. Also, the coverage was a little tighter. The Baldwin one is a bummer, and we'll get to Dougie later.
Yeah, and like some preview. Doug's really good, but
yeah, we'll
expand on it later. But Russell Wilson, you got to hit those, and you wonder, you know, maybe is it throwing motion? Maybe his shoulder's not as healthy as he implies. So that's something to keep an eye on.
I don't think so. Maybe. I think he just missed like two. Like those are throws that like everyone misses in the league, and except for like even Aaron Rodgers misses those throws from time to time. Like those are low percentage throws, and Russ is hitting them. I think he's second or third in the league in completion percentage on throws that are in the air over 20 yards. So like he's fine. Like I don't think there's an injury issue there. It's just like, man, where there's some inopportune near misses.
Right. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, those would have been nice to have. And I think, you know, if the officials get the Tyler Lockett offensive pass interference call right, you know, that even, you know, furthers the beat down that we give on the Giants. And if we have those plays, if we have Jimmy not dropping those balls, we put up a 40 or 50 burger on the New York Giants.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and speaking of the New York Giants, this is the portion in our recap where I respect our opponent. It was tough this week to I mean, like, they did nothing. Like, Eli did nothing. Like, it's insane that he didn't have a turnover. I mean, he had the fumble, but he didn't have an interception. So that's insane. But he completed under 50% of his passes for, like, I think 2 yards a drop. It was terrible.
Bad, yeah.
It was really bad. Their running game didn't get going. Their long run of the day was 9 yards. They averaged less than 3 yards a carry. Like, they're terrible. Their defense, yeah, Damon Snacks Harrison, he's great. But, like, the Seahawks has made other defensive tackles look better. Like, we made Mike Daniels look like Warren Sapp and Reggie White in one human. So, like, you only get so much credit. Landon Collins didn't get that big pick, so he doesn't get any credit. So, man, I am scraping the bottom of the barrel here. And I'm going to go with Evan Engram, the rookie tight end for New York. New York's receiving core was decimated coming into this game, so it makes sense that our cornerbacks were able to do as well as they could. Engram only ended up with 6 receptions for 60 yards and a touchdown, but he nearly had another huge play where he stepped out of bounds. For a rookie tight end to look as good as he looks, it got to be exciting for the Giants. He would have been really annoying for the Seahawks. And what's interesting is, and I just pulled this off of Twitter, let me credit it. I think it was Evan from Hawk Blogger who pointed this out. Engram, all of his catches were on diagonal routes. Like, he was able to make an impact in the game running more complicated routes than simple seam routes. He can't really run seam routes against the Seahawks because of Earl Thomas. And Engram wasn't doing that, and he was still picking up yardage. So that's impressive that he's running slants and crossing routes in like a pretty simple offense, but turning those into real production. He's fast, he's strong, he's good. I was impressed. Man, though, did I not respect the Giants. Yeah, if anything, I gotta like as many penalties as the Seahawks had, like, there weren't a lot of garbage penalties. I wasn't like angry at the refs. So maybe I should respect the refs for calling 15 penalties on the Seahawks and not making me like be like, this is some crap right here. Right. Like I was like, man, Seahawks gotta stop committing penalties.
Right. The rest are just doing their jobs, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And they got the Fail Mary call right. So maybe this week, I tip my cap to both Evan Engram and Tony Correnti and his staff for, you know, even though they called a bunch of stuff on the Seahawks, for doing it right. Keeping the rules in order.
Strong rebound game for Tony Correnti after last week in MetLife Stadium and getting that Austin Seferian Jenkins call.
Oh,
right or
right,
depending how you see it. Big rebound game for Tony Correnti. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt because refs are under scrutiny as long as that position's been in the game. So, yeah, Tony Correnti didn't do bad.
Do you want me to break some really irrelevant news on the pod right now?
Go ahead.
Because it's gonna ruin our future segments. Mm. Joe Thomas, torn tricep ligament, needs surgery.
So I think what happens now, he recovers and we get him at a lower price next season.
All right, I love your optimism.
It's okay. You just got to think forward, not to, not in the right now.
I love your optimism.
But you got to keep moving. You got to keep moving. Maybe we make another move, but Joe Thomas, maybe put that on the back burner for a little bit. And another left tackle that's in the news, Dwayne Brown. He ended his holdout for the Texans, so a trade really isn't likely at this point. I don't know if it was ever likely, but it really isn't likely at this point.
Yeah. All right. So what do we got? I feel like you got. Do you have one more thing?
Let's see. I just think that it's warranted that we just shout out how phenomenal Doug Baldwin is as a football.
Oh yeah. Player. Oh yeah. We're handing out our game balls. Yeah. So yeah, you hand out the offensive game ball.
Yeah. So Doug Baldwin, you put the ball in Baldwin because you get the game ball on offense.
You know how many drops Doug Baldwin has this season?
How many drops does he have this season?
Zero.
Zero, Jimmy Graham. You hear that? Zero.
Oh, man. He's been so good. I also will give him credit for pushing Tom Cable. I know he apologized for it after the game. But look, when Russell Wilson needs to speak and Doug Baldwin's willing to push Tom Cable to make that happen, it only makes me like Doug Baldwin more. He's so good. Russell Wilson can count on him breaking ankles pretty much every time he drops back, which allows Doug Baldwin to be as good a deep threat as Tyler Lockett and Paul Richardson, despite being 90% slower. That isn't true. Doug Baldwin's a great athlete. Yeah, but he's not fast. But he's not elite wide receiver fast. He's not running a 4.3. He's not running a 4.4. He's running like a 4.5 or 4.6. And you know, like, that's a big difference, and it doesn't matter.
For the lack of outright speed, he makes up for quickness and shiftiness when he has the ball in his hands.
It's his change of direction, and it's his ability to manufacture confusion in his change of direction. Like, his moves are incredible.
He's unpredictable.
Yeah. He's great. In terms of defensive game ball, we could always give it to Bobby or Earl, but Earl dropped those picks, and Bobby, while he played a perfect game, I'd say, against the Giants, he wasn't asked to do that much. So let's give it to Jaron Reed, who is turning into a pretty incredible defensive tackle. He managed to get, let's get the number right, 7 tackles.
That's as many as Bobby Wagner had this Sunday.
3 for a loss, and he had a strip sack. They caused the game-changing fumble that led to the flea flicker fail Mary. I mean, Jaron Reed, we drafted him thinking he would be a slightly better Atiba Rubin. He is turning into a legitimate pass rusher.
No, he was in the backfield a lot, and one play that stood out to me, it wasn't the strip sack, but it was a screen play where they threw the ball, and he absolutely ate it up, and he almost killed a man on that screen play.
4 or 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage. It was really great. I mean, we knew we were getting great value, getting a player of Reed's pedigree and talent in the second round. He was, you know, on a lot of draft boards, a late teens type pick, but he is living up to that. He's living up to the higher standard. He is making fools of the people who passed on him, rather than simply being a great second-round pick. He looks like a steal. And in order for the Seahawks to stay relevant going forward, we're going to have to find that young defensive talent to keep cycling through having playmakers on the defense. You know, like
that's, you have just the Shaquille Griffin opposite Richard Sherman coming on the team. And now you have, well, he wasn't with the team in the offseason, but you have Sheldon Richardson, and you have Jaron Reed under him learning.
Yeah, Frank Clark.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, like we had a couple fallow drafts in 2013 and 2014, but we've really turned it around the last couple of years and are putting ourselves back in a position where, you know, we have
the budding star talent coming for the next crop of dominant Seahawks.
I really feel like you can make a case right now, and it's not that hard, that the Seahawks should be the NFC favorites in this moment. And I say that despite being furious at them all the time when I watch them and being tired all the time.
It speaks to how, you know, used we are to them like playing near perfect football. And we're getting closer. We're getting closer to the point in the season where they start to get together offensively, really. And, you know, they don't they don't miss out on the plays they could have had, like, in the first, like, couple games, and they had in this game with Jimmy Graham. Like, they're a lot sharper in the execution down the line, and so we'll see them improve. And Jaron Reed, his explosiveness that we've seen in the run game blowing up plays, we're starting to see in the pass game. And he like the Seahawks need to keep doing, they continue to smell the blood in the water and lay on the pressure and don't really back down and don't really lay off, except for that last drive where they let them get downfield a little bit. But, like, they just played a dominant game on defense, and Jaron Reed was a huge part of that. I said on Twitter yesterday that if not for penalties, I don't think that they could get down the field on their own. The Giants just look lost out there. Yeah. And so I think the reason why Bobby didn't have all those tackles is because they weren't really getting past the line in the first place. So Bobby didn't have really a chance to rack up the numbers in the tackle department because the line was so great.
Yeah, and they weren't running a lot of plays. Like, total plays was 71 to 57. And a lot of those plays came really late for the Giants. They had, on their last drive, they had 10 plays. Other than that, they just weren't getting a lot of plays out there.
Yeah, and
that was with the penalties. That was with us giving them 6 first downs off penalty. What?
Right. I said on Thursday that the Seahawks were going to have a lot of possessions to work out their offense and see what works and see what doesn't. And there were spurts where they got the running game going, but also, like, we also averaged under 4 yards a carry. So there's still work to do in that department, and I don't think you're going to have the same opportunities against the Houston Texans, but it was definitely a step in the right direction in my eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think we are in really good shape. I think Houston's going to be a really interesting game because they are not the challenge we thought they were at the beginning of the year. They're a totally different challenge. It's sort of a Spider-Man pointing at Spider-Man situation at quarterback and not a J.J. Watt is going to kill our quarterback challenge. So I think it actually could be a fun, stressful game.
Right.
So
maybe they
go
back and forth putting points on the board. But if the Seahawks defense makes it easy on us and they perform like they did this week, albeit, you know, you're facing DeAndre Hopkins, Will Fuller, and Deshaun Watson rather than Eli Manning and a couple of, players that could have played, like, during the strike if they were alive during that era.
Yeah.
So, it's a different game, it's a different matchup, but it's exciting. We'll preview it during the week. We have a nice crossover show on Wednesday with Locked On Texans. Mm-hmm. And, if you liked the show today, you can go ahead, go on iTunes, leave a 5-star review, leave your Twitter handle, and then you will be entered to win a Pro Football Focus Edge membership. And you'll get access to all these pretty numbers that we're talking about on the show. We'll be able to see. You'll know too, besides from hearing secondhand that Bobby Wagner was a top graded Seahawk on Sunday, you'll know for yourself. And so maybe you leave a review, maybe you get the membership, maybe you don't need to listen to this podcast anymore, but maybe you do, because without us, you wouldn't get those numbers. So go ahead and do that. And while you're on the internet, go to LockedOnSeahawks.com. We are partnered with FanRag Sports. Go to Locked On Seahawks. It's powered by FanRag. And look at all the content we put on there. You'll get access to all the shows, all the words that I type, getting you prepared for the shows. And go ahead and read them. You know, I don't consider myself a terrible writer. I'm not on Spike's level yet. But, like the Seahawks, I still have...
What a great sale. You're a great writer, Grant. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise.
I still have work to do like the Seahawks. Hey, as good as I am... There's still room for improvement.
Man. All right.
It went from me being a pity party to me drinking my own Kool-Aid.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Respect that. All right. We'll be back tomorrow. We're going to win this week. We're going to win the Super Bowl. It's going to be fine.
All right. And for Locked On Seahawks, I'm Grant Goldberg.
And I'm Spike Friedman, predicting a Super Bowl win.